It's back a new long way from here. Open your mind, you cannot know the way the world has pushed. It's back a new long way from here. You cannot touch the way the world has moved. It's up a new long way from here. Open your heart, you cannot feel the way the world has pushed. It's like a new long way from here. Back on you.
Album, their newly released album, Follow Me, and you guys should check them out, and of course, check them out at myspace.com/Mastem, M-A-S-T-E-M. In fact, I like that song so well, I'm thinking about incorporating it into a theme song. Hopefully we'll have that all put together, hopefully next week. And I want to thank you all for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly, and I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Oh, God, it's been such a nice day today. It's a little nice and windy. Shouldn't say used, but, because it's not, but it's pretty nice out here in Vegas right now. Got that, I call it the L.A. weather, beach weather. But I got a very cool show that I'm going to start to do today. As you all probably all see on the front there about Kabbalah. But first, I want to wish everybody a happy Earth Day. Should be like every second a happy Earth Day, or a millisecond. And do contact me if you've got, of course, as I reiterate, contact me via email at flyingpigs@artlover.com or at my MySpace account, myspace.com/AndrewFetter. Or if you like, if you have a Twitter, and you can always follow me and I'll follow you at flyingpigs26. And send me your comments or questions, even as I go through this particular show, because I will try to expand upon a lot of information in as brief time as I could. But also, first, I would like to give my condolences to one of the members of here at BBS Radio. My condolences go out to Zeth and his family for his loss, and my thoughts and prayers, of course, go out to him and his family and friends, of that matter. And also, for right now, I want to just let everybody know, and do circle your calendar. I got a very, very special guest coming on May 1st. That's, of course, next week. Magid Ben Yosef. And I've had him on a past show. We talked about the House of Joseph and all that stuff. We're linking to a connection between Native Americans and a couple other subjects, such as that we talked about the Geronimo skull and how it was sort of ripped off by Bush's granddad. But he's coming on my show next week, and he's going to discuss the Hopis and how they are possibly or truly connected to the people of Israel. Perhaps they are one of the very missing tribes. Maybe Ezekiel's prophecies are actually coming true. But today is the subject of Kabbalah. And I've had a lot of questions. Everybody is sending me messages, and it's sort of funny because I get messages about that all the time. Even when I do interviews, it's sort of funny when I do my book, my past two books, The Heretic or When the Angels Have Risen, specifically even When the Angels Have Risen, I'd go on political shows and I had people asking me questions about Kabbalah, which was sort of funny. And so I decided, I know I only did two past shows, and I went into some practical sides of Kabbalah, but I decided, since now I'm doing my show more in a weekly program, and I will have, you know, obviously interviews and of course my lovely little rants here and there, and those, by the way, just come to me and just have to just pour out stuff, you know, what's at the given moment of certain events, certain things that I feel that need to be spoken, or perhaps me, I'm just, tell you the truth, I'm just the vessel carrying out the, you know, Gabriel's horn, and so to speak. I'm not blowing the horn. Sounds a little too weird. That's like the people running around here last week, teabagging. When I heard that, that sounds like blowing Gabriel's horn, if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I know when people ask me about Kabbalah, and some people I've had ask me, well, what's your background with that? And I have some very interesting, you know, questions about that. So I'll briefly get into that real quick. Okay, my first exposure to the idea of Kabbalism, or actually brought to my fruition here, not fruition, brought in my front of my face, was when I had gotten married. That was back in 1978 in Israel. And at the time, my ex-brother-in-law, who is, I guess, still, a rabbi within the Lubavitch movement, within the Hasid, and he is a Hasid, and he took me and then my ex-wife, just prior to getting married, he goes to a famous holy man. His name was Rabbi Yamini, and he was actually a Yemenite, which is sort of funny, Yamini, which means of Yemen, sort of funny, but he was a famous rabbi who was extreme, quite holy. He lived in Jerusalem and brought us to him to get your blessing, and they do some Kabbalistic holy things. So first, when I first saw him, well, in fact, that was the only time I saw him with my ex-wife, you sit down there, and I remember my brother-in-law sitting there, and as he was speaking, you're basically not even using your words. You're talking with your thoughts, which was pretty amazing. And then he turned to my brother-in-law at the time, and by the way, I was 20 years old, and said that I should be studying Kabbalah. Now, so people understand that most people, when you're supposed to be, you're not under the rules, so to speak, the rabbi rules, if you want to call them that, you're not allowed to study Kabbalah until you're 40 years old. So they were amazingly shocked. Me, I just looked at what it is, and I didn't even say, oh, I don't want to get involved with that. You know, I was so far, as you could say, religious in those mechanical bases. I didn't want nothing to do with it. But he vehemently told him that he felt I should be going to that direction, that I was ready now, here and now, to do that. Well, lo and behold, after a couple years go by, I go back to the States for a couple years, finish my schooling, and then in 1980 went back, in which at that time when I went back, talk about full circle, I ended up living up near Moshav, called Moshav Amikam, which is in the, what they call Tachat HaGalil, which is just south of Zichron Yaakov, Carmel, Haifa area, northern Israel, so people understand where that is. Well, through a weird way, I ended up meeting a holy man called the Moa, as they often referred. He was definitely a sage. He was one of the surviving sages from Libya, who at that time in the 1950s, a group of Arabs tried to attack them, threw a bomb in their meeting mikveh. I mean, into their, not mikveh, their, what was the word they used? Anyway, they had like little sessions, these little meetings. You could call it like a minyan. And everyone was killed except for him. He lost his arm, and he was blinded from it. They brought him to Israel in the 1950s. Under his guidance, he had brought me in, and it was a word about how that happened. He was, first of all, highly psychic, highly evolved. When you would sit in his presence, you're literally, I had witnessed it, you're colors of your clothes would change colors, literally. If you had brown, it would turn blue, green, it would turn, you know, beige. It was amazing. So anyway, under his guidance, I studied under him, and going through the several sefers, or what they call the books, which I'll explain later, and that brought me into a very religious, in the mechanical sense. In fact, I was very pious. I had a little long, my beard was extremely long. I would never cut my hair or my beard. I had long little things around my, what people say, hasid peyot. I was already kosher because I was a vegetarian. I didn't work on the Sabbath. I mean, I was very, very religious. Got more so as time progressed. When I came back from the States, I felt like I was going down the wrong hole, almost like a deep hole, never ending, that to me it was like over, you know, to me, like, I wanted to move away from it. So quickly I diverted, and lo and behold, after coming back to the States in 86, 2 years later, I met just Janae Sinclair, and through her framework, I learned that I did not need to do a lot of the mechanics of within being the religious course of studying Kabbalah, so to speak, and yet be connected to the realm what I was going through and learn. And then while under her guidance, I quickly, what they call, started doing, I was very easily to go out of body, which is also called the Merkava, which I'll explain later. And during that course, between both that and Janae's guidance, I started learning even more and more and more. And of course, in the other realm, so to speak, in the other school, in the other dimensions, I've incorporated a lot of information. Anyway, so that's sort of my background. So, but to get into what Kabbalah is, literally, it literally means, in a sense, to receive. It's a welcoming, like almost a kabel. And in Hebrew, which I'll explain, it has different functions. Why? They use that word a lot. But to understand, look at what Kabbalism is in Kabbalah, and it's both theoretical and practical, which is sort of amazing. It is almost a very identical to Taoism, Buddhism, and Native American spirituality. In fact, there is a lot of similar, almost exact ways of looking at things, approaches toward things, breakup of things. They may use different names, but almost identical. So, basically, that's what I find pretty fascinating myself. Now, before I continue, I just want you all to realize I probably will go on different tangents, because that's Kabbalah, you'll see, is a little bit different, and when you're looking into perspectives, you're looking into perspectives of an infinite while I'm trying to explain it into a finite basis, which is like taking a round chip and sticking into a triangle or a rectangle hole, okay? So, one person, so you understand what I'm saying, one person I remember asked me, what is Kabbalah? And I would say, Kabbalah is like 16 divided by 7 plus 80 divided by 9 times 13 equals 44. And they go, wait, that doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. And I says, then you don't get Kabbalah. You don't get it. And that's the whole point. See, you can't try to put a peg into it. You can't put a square. You can't functionalize and categorize. And what most people are taught, even within like places like Kabbalah Center and things like that, and other areas and reading, and things that are translated even to English from Aramaic or Hebrew or any other writings, it's doing that. Because most a lot of people got like lost in the wilderness, so to speak. And in fact, it'd be like trying to figure out pi. I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Pi, but the guy literally goes nuts trying to figure, 3.14 da 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 da, and it keeps on going on and on and on. That essentially is sort of like Kabbalah. Kabbalah is not a knowing; it is more of an understanding with a collective of wisdom. Which is all, it's like tasting a fruit. If you taste an orange or an apple, we all know it's sweet, or we interpret of it as being sweet. But when you try to describe it to a detail, it gets rather hard. And that's sort of, in a way, sort of like, because you're trying to reflect the experience, and hence that is sort of like Kabbalah. You're reflecting the experience of your connectedness. So, what is Kabbalah again? Where does it come from? What is it? First of all, it started since the days of Abraham. And it is thought that was the unification. There's a process. There's a time period from that time on, from Abraham on, is when Kabbalism, so to speak, is that way of thinking developed. From that particular area. But there's 3%, to understand Kabbalah, you have to look at what the core is, which is Torah, which is the evolution of Kabbalism. People believe that Torah is basically the Word of God. That's the five books of Moses. But when you look at Torah, or the five books of Moses, there are 3 perspectives of looking at it. You can look at it as a literal reading, like you read the line. There's Adam and Eve and how many days God created Earth and whatever. There's the interpretive way of reading it. People read a passage and they try to figure out what the real meaning behind that passage really meant. All right? And then there's the soul, which is that very essence, the really character, the demeanor. It would be like looking at Torah, would be like looking at a person. Let's see if it was a male. And you see from outside, he's just lying there in front of you. And he had black hair. and olive skin and brown eyes. And you would say, okay, that's what he has. You know nothing about, but that's when you're looking at the person physiologically on the outside surface, that's like looking at Torah. That's literally what you're literally looking at from the outside. Then there are people who would try to interpret it. Why does he have black hair instead of blonde hair? Why doesn't he have blue eyes instead of brown eyes and olive skin instead of white skin? And why is he so long or why is he so short or why is he fat or why is he short? And, you know, why is he muscular or not muscular? That would be interpretation. And you don't even know the person because he hasn't spoken. You don't know what demeanor. You haven't seen any actions behind him. He's just lying there like on a slab of meat. So what is Kabbalah is understanding the soul, the center spirit behind Torah. That would be sort of like the same character. Now, again, I'm going to go off a little tangent here. To understand, since Torah was written in Hebrew, you have to understand the Hebrew has what they call the shorash, the root, is an action, literally. Meaning there's not a noun, it's an action. Everything is moving, it's going, it's constantly flowing. And there was a very reason to that. Because life is constantly moving. So there has that foundation of it. The second thing you have to understand is that with each letter in Hebrew represents a number. Hence numerology. That's where numerology, by the way, came from. So since they all have representative numbers and they have certain roots, other aspects, new dimensions, occur within the Torah itself. And there's also these things that are called on the crown. And some people have referred, I mean, there's a famous thing that's referred to, since God gave us the Torah, it is out of his tongue that he spoke. So literally, some people, there's been, you know, many things written that Torah is literally the tongue of God. Therefore, the little buds are these little, like, crowns on the top. And there is also significance of those as well. In fact, even numerological explanations for that. And also in Hebrew, it's interesting. It also has the reflection of when you move letters in and out of different aspects, it creates a new connection. I'll give you an example. In Hebrew, when you say Ish or Isha, Ish meaning man, Isha meaning woman, and there's called the Yud and Hey, the Ya or Ha in Hebrew. When you remove that out of Ish or Isha, it becomes Esh. So if you take God, like, out of man or woman, you create fire, Esh. And that fire is often referred to as anger. So you see in Hebrew, there's always these mixtures of things, like I said. Now, there is a theoretical, like I said, and I know I have in the past talked about practical, but I'll quickly go into some of the theoretical of Torah of Kabbalism. And to understand the theoretical, you have to look at things, like I said, Torah is like the tongue. And you'll hear also words called otio, which is like utterances. And then there's numbers. And the sequence of these numbers are these utterances, which are counted, create vortexes, which are represented by the letters. Again, numbers. And the vortexes are certain points and areas. So there's two dimensions looking within the universe, and from a Kabbalistical point, from Kabbalah. There are things you look that are vortex, certain points that go an infinite point. And then there are things that look at things in an infinite manner. Or, as they say, Ein Sof, which I'll get into, beyond the infinite. So, there, like I said, there's vortexes, but there are also realms of the infinite. The Ein Sof, like I said, beyond the infinite, which ironically is like Tao. which also is referred is what is God, is the infinite space, everything, everybody's part of that infinite. So it's sort of hard to personify God if you look into that perspective. That is the, anytime you personify God, you're making it God into a he or a she, you're actually going the raw opposite end. You're creating the illusion of a finite when the reality, God is infinite. We're all part of God. We all infinitely have the same dimensions and all around our universe, which is sort of funny because they're just now pointing to that fact in quantum physics. So, you have to look at the universe in like an infinite way to really gain an understanding of what is in. Not a knowing, an understanding. Now, I'm going to go through real quickly. There's a famous thing that people often see in Kabbalah. And you probably see little diagrams. In fact, I have it up there. You'll see like the thing on the top and the bottom with little O's. And I have Hebrew written and then explanations in English. And it's called Sefirot. The Sefirot, the Sefirot that you'll see designates little areas. And it's basically people try to memorize and try to figure them and all that stuff. But they forget that these are concepts. They're not separate. They're all interrelated. They're all part of the same sequence. And then you also have to realize what is, when you say Sefirot, it means to count is lispor in Hebrew. It's counting. Again, counting numbers. That's why I guess, you know, Einstein with physics, there is a relationship between numbers and in Judaism. You know, you'll see why there's 8 days and 7 days and 5 days and 3 days and one this, and there's a reason for all that. And that's what I said, there's vortexes behind those numbers. They create a vibration in a sense. Now, within the Sefirot, like I just mentioned, and some people refer to, you know, like, with them together, it's the divine presence. Like, in fact, they group it together. But you'll see on the top, it'll say, like, the Keter, which is the crown. It's the creator, the infinite light that goes, you know, the connection. I am the I am, Allah God. People, you've probably, maybe have heard. And then on one side, you'll have the, often on, I believe on the right side is the Chokmah. On the other side you'll have Bina, or Vina, which is understanding. And the Chokmah is like the wisdom, the power of the wisdom, and the Bina is, the understanding. And you'll also, they also have a more masculine and a feminine side. And then there's Chesed, which is feeling grace, having mercy, empathy. Then there's Gevrut, which is like the judgment, the strength, the determination, the intention. And the Teferet, which is the balance, the compassion, the balance of things. You know, right side, left side, things sort of balance themselves out in nature. You know, for every action, there's a reaction. And then Netzach, which is the persistence, the will, the contemplation, the initiative of it. And then there's Hod, which is the I don't like to use the word surrender. Some people use that as comparing it to surrender, but it's more of the, to me, I believe it's the, you know, the keeping things on an even keel, focusing, but having a sincerity behind it. And then there's what they say, Yasod, which is the foundation. It's like the base of all things. It's like the encapsulation. But it's also reflected to, Yasod is also manifesting the creations of thoughts. And then, last, the number 10th one, by the way, 10, you'll know it's a coincidental down the line, is the physical presence. Often the Malkah, which, or some people call it Malkut, It's also it represents there's a healing, the healing presence of all things, to fix things, the tikkunim. But it's also, it is connected to the physical presence, meaning earth, on the physical things that you see, which they often refer to in the illusion, because you're an illusion, you're perceiving things. And when you perceive things, it's like you're having alluding to. And then, of course, there's other ones. Some have added dot, which means knowledge, and they've thrown that in there, and they mix them around. And then people have referred sometimes, the Sephiroth is often referred to the tree of life. I don't see that too much personally, but, everybody has their own way of looking at it. If I look at the tree of life, is all souls connected. And that's basically the universe. Then, to get into another understanding of theology within Kabbalism, it's broken down into four worlds. Okay? And this is another interrelated concept. So now you know about Sephiroth. But then there's Atalut, Bira, Yitzhara, Asura. And these are what they call the realms, the areas, the worlds. Etzalut is, in a way, the ultimate world of what they say, the Ein Sof of God. In fact, they say, there's a story where that's where the cherubim are located, little baby angels people see. Often said, in order to get up to that, in order to enter that realm, you enter that realm as a child. That's why you've heard people often refer to the child within you. Well, that's what that's referred to often. When you become a you enter to be there, it's as that realm. And by the way, when you get to that realm, that's a very high, your frequency of your own soul is so high that you're able to function into that realm. And by the way, only man's soul, contrary to, this makes us the difference between the angels and man's soul, is that because we have the opportunity to choose, we can move ahead of the angels and enter that realm of Atzilut, where the angels are stuck. I don't like to use the word stuck, but they're at the highest frequency they can ever match is in called Bira, which is the world of creation. And that's where the angels, the highest angels, even the archangels, can inhabit. Well, man or soul of man can actually go above that. And then, of course, there's Yetzira. And at this level, it's creation, the formation, the world of formation. Which is sort of funny, because Bira literally means the world of creation, yet that's where the angels are. Don't understand that, but that's how they termed it. But I'm just explaining those terms. And then there's Asiya, which is Asiya with onion. Did I say it right? Anyway, that is the physical world where you see in front of your, earth. The four realms, often referred, and you'll read about them and hear about them and stuff. And then, of course, they're sectioned off. And by the way, it's four. So we have 10, and then there's a four, and they have a reason. And then you'll see within the Sephiroth, it's broken down in three columns. The central column, which is the head, which is like the pillar, usually associated with, they'll have a representative of the Hebrew letter Aleph, which is like the breathe, the air, the air we breathe. That's represented in the middle, center air. And then on the right side, the Chokmah side, that which is Chokmah, which I explained was wisdom, is often represented by the Hebrew letter Shin, which represents the masculine, which represents fire. And then on the opposite side, on the left side, you have a divide represented by, often called Kav, small side, the left side. It's the pillar of severity, often it's related to. But it's represented by the Hebrew letter Mem, and Mem, you know, it looks just like water because that's what it is. It is also the feminine side, and that's, you understand between the two sequences of wisdom and Bina. It's not to make there's like one has a penis and one a vagina, it's, or anything like that. It's just the concepts is one's receiving, one's more passive, one's more like with wisdom wisdom is more of a will. You direct yourself toward wisdom, understanding is to sit back and to receive. It's more passive, while one's more proactive, you can say. And so that's sort of the concepts. Not to say that men and women are like that. So you can see that in these realms, there are certain numerical sequences. Like I just said, there's 3, there's 4, there's 10. People go, what, 10, 3, 4? Sounds like a bunch of math to me. But that is the basis. There's a lot of numerological events happening. When the tree itself fruit, for example, which has, I said, like 10 concepts. And then if you ran lines, how they're all interreacted to each other, there's 22 paths for their connection. And 22, which adds up to 4, but 2 and 2, there's a duality, and there's also, it's called one of the master numbers. It's creating, anytime you see numbers that are paired, often referred to as master creating numbers. So see 11, let 1 and 1, or 2 and 2, 3, 3, 4, 4. Those are often referred to. So you'll see a different sequence of these new numbers. And why I bring that up is because their utterances are referred to way how these numbers came about. Was often, if you read within the with scripture, and this is going to the underlying point, it's like when God created the world, you know, both dark and light. Define here's dark and here's light. I'm not personifying God. I'm just trying to give you in our concrete terms. He put two hands down, each with 5 fingers, right? And thus created the universe out of 10, 5 and 5. Where by 5, by keeping it equal, that's where light defines dark, and dark defines light, and evil defines goodness. Hence, I mean, and that basically tells you, I mean, if there was no evil or dark, how would you know what good would be? You couldn't define it. And that's a reality. I mean, even in the world above, in the presence of all beings, people talk to, you know, even extraterrestrials or any events or spiritually, you will have both. And they're created in equal measure for every action and reaction. But anyway, so you have two hands, the 2 for 10, you know, you have 10. And then it is said with 22 utterances, life itself was created, hence the physical world, of the physical world, both within and the spiritual world of the realm of the souls, which was created with 22 utterances. And if you add those two together, 10 and 22, that's 32, and you divide thus, that becomes a 5, and you can see the parallel between that. So that's called, which a 5 is often referred, which I'll explain later, is the bridge and protection or whatever. But that life was created in 32 utterances, life in the world. You see 10 and 22, 32. And then, to keep things continually, you know, the world was created, life was created, and to keep it continually changing and reinventing itself and remanifesting itself, giving the opportunity your soul to enter the physical world, and also renew and keep on continuing its course, because you are like infinite. and keep that infinite process continuation that life never stops. Because if it just created it, you have to, it has to maintain itself. It's like creating a picture. You don't want to just like the house just, you know, just evaporate. Well, to keep in the renew of that, or the sustaining element of it, it was done with 20 utterances. Thus, now you have 20 and 32, and that equals the 52, which brings it down to a 7, and you'll see that that's the significance of 7. Often you'll hear 7. So there's certain vortex and certain reasons why these numbers are utilized. In fact, one of God's names, in fact, when they use, you'll see the Yud, which is in Hebrew, looks like a little squiggly line up, and it's pronounced Yah in Hebrew, Yah, the consonant. That represents 10. And there's, of course, there's like some of 300 names of God, and, in Torah. And, there's the one that often people hear, Yod Heh Vav Heh, which is Yahweh, and that's 26, which becomes 8, which represent an infinite space of also with duality, that things live on two sides at a simultaneous moment. In fact, it's amazing. Antimatter, matter, the duality of particle and, wave, as opposed to energy. I mean, you'll feel there's things that are coming into a connection between even in the quantum way of looking things as in the Kabbalism. It's fascinating. To me, it is, anyway. And then there is, of course, 3 is healing and justice. 4 represents the universe's karmic reactions. 5 that I had just mentioned represents protection. But it also leads to a bridge to wisdom and understanding, which is why 5 is. And you'll also see 5 fingers he's used against the evil eye. That's why how that came about. And of course, I mentioned 8 is the duality. And I can go on and on. There's many numbers. I mean, you can look them up down the line, check them out. But that's how the numerological ideas from the Western Western civilization developed. Even today, the numerology is based upon the Kabbalistical approaches. And speaking of Kabbalism, I mean, I was talking to a couple. Well, in fact, my therapist is out with my physical therapist. I don't see a psychologist. My physical, because I was in a, you know, I asked him. And he is a Mormon. He asked me about Kabbalism, and I said, "Well, you know, Jesus is a Kabbalist." And he goes, "Huh?" And I said, "I try to explain. Yeah, well, see, this is the problem with Christianity, and it's not really the theology of what Jesus had embraced. He was a Kabbalist. Jesus definitely believed that God in the universe is infinite, and therefore." You cannot apply a finite image, nor create a father-son concept, which is a Roman-Greek ideology. It's to the contrary. Therefore, if anything you see within, I see within the New Testament that projects that ideology, it's contrary to, I hate to say it to you, those people who believe in Orthodox, of today's Christianity, which is basically Orthodox Christianity, founded upon Roman principles, basically. Is contrary to what Jesus would have believed in, okay? There's no father-son. He would never, ever look at that. No way, okay? This is where he came, the reason why he was a Kabbalist is because he was a reactionary to the rabbis because of his beliefs. I don't know, too dwelling too much in, but you'll understand as I go along. And that's where the literal view they a lot of Christians have with understanding. You have the literal concepts they read from Jesus as opposed to what's the underlying factor. Because the truth, like the universe and understanding and wisdom of the infinite, these were concepts that even Jesus himself embraced. But were conveniently removed by his followers down the line. Except for if you read, of course, Book of Thomas and Mary Magdalene, which people are now exposing to his real concepts. Now, another understanding within Kabbalism is the understanding of reincarnation. And to understand that, we, in within Kabbalism and within Judaism, this also differentiates from Orthodox Christianity, we do have that concept and faith, belief in that your soul comes into an embodiment over and over in this physical world to what they call tikkun, to fix what went bad, to reconstruct, to redo. So it's like I said, tikkun in Hebrew, which literally means to fix. So you're coming back to fix what you had created in your past life, or even tikkun within your own life. And tikkun is literally the same thing as karma, which is sort of, I find, quite ironic. It's almost identical. And this also brings in the problem of people understanding the fear of God, because here I'm going back to, again, the personification, the fear of God. Well, he's, you know, if we don't do this, he's going to punish you. No, no. What's really the concept is the universe is just going to give you the karmic consequences of your action. Therefore, people are afraid that, oops, I just did this bad thing, and now I'm going to receive the tikkun of that, the karmic consequence, hence the punishment. So that's where that came out. And to get really down the line real quick here, there are several books of theater that found the basis of Kabbalism. There's the Zohar, which is written by Shimon Bar Yochai. And he had spent, they say, hid in a cave. This is during the Roman persecution for 13 years, studied Torah with his son Eleazar. And supposedly he hid himself, and during this time he was inspired by Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet, and then wrote the Zohar, which Zohar literally means radiance, like of light, bright light, splendor, radiance, I don't know. And it's comprised by about five books. Or several books, excuse me. Some people break it up differently. But in its original format, it was broken up within five, which reflected Torah. And it was written primarily in Aramaic. And it gets into discussion the nature of God, the origin, structure of the universe, the nature of sins, the souls, redemption, reincarnation, good and evil, the relation between God and man, and so on and so on. But there are a lot of rabbis now who did not approve or didn't like it, and they still don't. They feel weirded out over it, because what it does, it develops a connection between man directly with God, which is the fundamentals really behind Judaism, instead of going through the cleric, the rabbi, to tell you, to interpret for you. You're really supposed to be connected. It shows the real direct connection, the unification. And in fact, it was censored by a lot of rabbis. In fact, even Rambam, Mohammadis, didn't prove like it. They're in even today. And then they threw this little law that you have to, like I said, be 40 years old in order to study it. And, you know, they threw all these little creative parameters of it. And speaking of which, there was a famous, I want to also mention, there was a rabbi who, Isaac Luria, who was called the Ari, the Lion, and he lived in Tzfat during the 1500s, and they say he was the reincarnate of Bar Yochai, because he was like, he already knew it, like, inside out. He had all these healing powers and abilities and whatnot, and was very prophetic. And in fact, he lived in a great, created a presence. He lived in northern Israel. In fact, for over 700 years, there had been a huge Jewish presence there in the Galil area. And that was that. And then there's a sefer called Sefer Razei HaMakah, or HaMalach, the Book of Raziel. And it gets into, it divides also into five books. And it gets into mystical elements, creation, about angels, magical elements within the zodiac, names of God, and the protective, some people call protective spells or writings and, you know, healing amulets and so on and so on. And then there's a safer Yetzirah, which is devoted concerning mainly the concepts of God and the angels. In fact, in there you'll see all of God's names within the first sentence. And it gets into the Sefirot and so on, and names and utilizations of letters and numbers and sequences of numbers. And it's very detailed. Going really quickly here because I didn't realize I'm running in time, like I said. I will have a part two, part three, and part four down the line. And, of course, there's the Bahir, which I've also personally have studied, which takes into the shapes and the sequences and numbers and the vowels and letters and the mystical statements behind, and also refers to the Sefer Yetzirah, which I just mentioned. But all in all, the point of, and this is real important, the whole point of, and by the way, of understanding Kabbalism. Oh, by the way, there's one other book called Hechalot, which refers to often the things about Enoch, which mysteriously disappeared within the Old Testament. But anyway, the whole point of theoretical of Kabbalah is to learn to focus and understand. That's why I said 1 plus 6 divided by 13. It's really to teach you a focus and understanding. That's the theoretical process. It's a preparation. And then the practical side, which is the preparation through meditation and grounding as well as focusing. Because if you sit there and study and da-da-da, or you go through out and you start doing the meditation part, you need to get yourself grounded. You have to develop yourself to be able to focus. You have to have that balancing thing. You know, so you connect here on the physical, because otherwise you'll go up and never come back in your body. Or some people go get lost in their own universe and try to peg it, and therefore they almost find themselves going nuts from it. And basically, prayer is a form of preparation. But is often, on the contrary, it's been utilized to price submission rather than its true purpose, which was really to ground you and to connect to the One, which I'm going to get into real quick, which the One, often too, when you hear the One, One God, or One Universe, is essentially meaning, is in Hebrew, it says Echad. Echad is, in Hebrew, One, but Bayachad means together. So you can see the references of togetherness, the echud, together, and that was a reference. There's a famous prayer that is often said. In fact, it's you say before you die, you say Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. And what it is Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. This is often referred to as the translation, but I is not really in reference into what is the behind, the spirit of behind it. Because in the correct one, it would be, Hear, O Israel, with our high respect for the God, our God is one. We are one together as a God, as one. So it's the connection of understanding, the connection between masculine and feminine, because like, I'm going real quick through here, but there is, when the often referred to when the soul of man is often referred to the feminine side of the, you know, a feminine situation, and the masculine is the universe, God in the universe. When they come together, they call it a spiritual orgasm. Literally, it says that in the Zohar. But it refer what it thinking of, think about it. When you learn something, you find something, you get this like high thing just pop in your head, that glowing, the, you know, the bulb lights up, or that essence, when you feel together or oneness and you have this funny feeling, that is the spiritual orgasm that's often referred. And then, of course, which I have mentioned, which I will get into of more detail to some extent, is called the Merkava, which is actually leaving your body. And when you do so, there are two instances of connection. There's the connection of understanding and as well as receiving of wisdom. Flip-flop one to the other. But all in all, the whole point of Kabbalism is to also to one of that, like I said in the, before, is the approach. You understand that there is an Ein Sof beyond the infinite, and when you have that perspective, then you're really having the understanding of our universe, and that is what God is. It's the beyond the Ein Sof, beyond the infinite. And that is what the is essence when you do the Shema Echad. You are now one. You are together, one with the universe. It's not that you never were. You always are. It's a understanding. And therefore, you have that wisdom that you've always had. It's removing those veils. We have veils that have been we put upon ourselves because if we knew, we'd just freak out and go, what the hell is all this information? And if you receive it in an understanding way, then you don't get overwhelmed, because you can't really get overwhelmed if you do it in an infinite manner as opposed to a finite manner. If you try to pose something that's infinite, stick it in a jar, that's when people go, whoa, what the hell, or they'll make up things. So, I think I wrapped that thing up really fast as I could. I'm sorry, I rushed some of the information. This will be put up on the archives within a couple of days, so do check that out if you missed any information. If you have any questions, please do send me an email, message, Twitter me, whatever. I'll try to get back to you as soon as possible to your answers or answer your questions. And I will go back and reflect upon certain things I did, because I try to cover a lot of information here. And I will, now that I have done a broad scale, extremely broad, I will get into, down the line, more of detail of certain establishments and certain understandings within a Kabbalistical perspective. So, I wish to close with one of my favorite songs, We Belong, by Denise Vasquez. Do check her out at denisevasquez.com. And hopefully I'm working on having her also as a future guest. We're trying to schedule a date here. And hopefully over the next 2 months I'll have her on. And with that, God bless you all. And thank you for listening.
20 times I've tried to tell you. 20 times I've cried alone. With some surprise how well you cut my feelings to the bone. Don't wanna leave you really, just wanna break the ice. Do I look silly to you when I yield to your advice? When you say we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder, we belong to the sound of the words we both fall. Whatever we deny or embrace, for worse or for better, we belong together. Si acaso no lo sabes, te aseguro que es verdad. El cariño que es sincero no se acaba con crueldad. Olvida lo que fuimos y despreciaslo más bien. Pero juntitos prendimos que la luna era de miel. Junto a ti solo es mi angela. Junto a ti como radio de luz que ha brotado el cielo. No importa por venir sin sufrir, es mi triste destino. Junto a ti hasta el fin de camino. Close your eyes and try to sleep now. Close your eyes and try to dream. Clear your mind and do your best to try and wash the palate clean. We can't begin to know now how much we really care. but I hear your voice inside me, and I see your face everywhere. Now I say we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder, we belong to the sound of the words we both fall in under. Whatever we deny or embrace, for worse or for better, we belong together. Junto a ti, solo es mi anhelo. Junto a ti, como radio de luz que ha brotado el cielo. No importa por venir, si sufrir es mi triste deseo.